Okay, we'll go ahead and call the committee to order, and the secretary will take the roll.
Chairman Jones?
Here.
Vice Chair Holmland?
Here.
Vice Chair Regeer?
Here.
Vice Chair Cheetah?
Here.
Vice Chair Cafaro? Here. Representative Bartel?
Here.
Representative Beatty?
Here.
Representative Fuller?
Here.
Representative Garner?
Here.
Representative Hamilton?
Here.
Representative Hopkins?
Here.
Representative Keene?
Here.
Representative Keough?
Here.
Representative Kerr Carpenter?
Here.
Representative Mercer?
Here.
Representative Moore?
Here.
Representative Nave?
Here.
Representative Patelis?
Here.
Representative Reed?
Here.
Representative Rickey?
Here.
Representative Schillinger?
Here.
Representative Stuart Paragoy?
Here.
Representative Vinton?
Excused.
Representative Windy Boy?
Here.
We have a quorum of 23.
We have 23 out of 24 here, so we have a quorum. So we have a ton of bills to hear and do an executive on. If we get them done in this 2 hours, we don't have to come in after the floor tonight. If we do, don't, we get to come back. And so it would be good if we didn't spend a ton of time and that we focused on the fiscal notes and tried to do our work, but do it promptly and quickly. I'd like to discourage amendments on these bills. If you feel they need to be amended and you want to pass a bill, please follow it to the Senate. Amending it now will be extremely difficult to accomplish and actually be successful with. Unfortunately, they are here very late. I'm just following the order of the drop. There's no magic to this. This is how they drop down to us. So we have three that are here previously. We'll begin with the first of them, which is House Bill 394. Oh, House Bill 406. I'm sorry, I'm on my list opposite of that. House Bill 406.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Representative Mark Noland, N-O-L-A-N-D, from the Greater Big Fork area, and I bring before you this fine, distinguished, busy committee, House Bill 406, an act generally revising the Montana Ballot Interference Protection Act. Hopefully you all understand what this bill particularly does. Talks about, on page one, and I'm just going to do a few of them, must be a resident of the state. Must not be paid anything of value based on the number of ballots collected or conveyed, and shall register with the election administrator in each county where the individual intends to collect the ballot. Those who can collect the ballots, specifically if you want to look on page 2, starting with line 18 and through 21, it says a caregiver, a family member, a household member, or an acquaintance. And we did hear on the floor, and it was explained in the committee hearing what an acquaintance is. If you know somebody, that's an acquaintance. So everybody can have their ballots picked up and dropped in the ballot box to be given to make sure their vote is counted. The important thing of this is we're trying to protect the sanctity and the sacredness of the ballot and our voting rights, and with this, making sure that people don't abuse it. That's why we have this bill presented before you today. I did talk to the, regarding the fiscal note, I did talk to the Secretary of State and the Department of Justice, and this bill will not be affected because the DOJ will just absorb this. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Are there proponents to the fiscal note? Physical proponents? Okay. Are there virtual opponents to the fiscal, virtual proponents to the fiscal note? Physical opponents.
Opponents.
What does that? Okay, and remember, we are speaking in this committee only to the fiscal note, and I would note that the. You probably heard it as you came in that the sponsor indicated that it would the fiscal note would be absorbed by the Department of Justice. But just on the fiscal note, please.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Keaton Sunchild, S-U-N-C-H-I-L-D, political director for Western Native Voice. You know, we rise in opposition. We don't think that this price tag is that this chunk of money is needed to go to a program like this that has already proven unconstitutional, and you know, would take away vital resources for programs that would better suit rural and native Montana, rather than going to a program like this that's just going to suppress votes and lead to more lawsuits down the road. So with that, we ask that you vote no on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Additional opponents? And on the fiscal note, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Katjana Stutzer, KatjanaStutzer, here on behalf of the Montana Public Interest Research Group, or MOPIRG. And in addition to what has already been said, I would just like to emphasize that we think House Bill 406 is going to be an unnecessarily costly bill with some of the changes. The record of delivery requirements now are going to create new processes for clerks to have to implement within retraining and staff hours within their departments, as well as this creation of a new registry to report ballots that have been delivered and the signature verification. This bill does not say that only registered voters can deliver ballots, as it should. If your spouse is not a registered voter, they bring your ballot into elections. Elections now has no way of verifying the signature of your spouse on that ballot, so we need to create some sort of new registry to make sure that we have those signatures verified, and as well as we know that education, sending mailers to every registered voter to let them know about the changes, as well as
so
communications.
Please, we talk only on fiscal notes. The policy goes into policy committees. Speak to this from a money point of view. We are a fiscal committee. We don't re-debate policy.
Absolutely, yeah.
Mr. Chairman, she is talking about the fiscal impact, Mr. Chairman. Although it's not in the fiscal note, I think that's a good point.
Okay, thank you.
So, Mr. Chairman, so I would just say that these education efforts are certainly going to be costly to the state, as well as I'm sure we know that a lawsuit would be very costly to our state. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Additional opponents? Okay, virtual opponents, I see a hand is up, or a couple. Oh, wait, there's another physical opponent. Again, please limit your testimony to fiscal.
Yes, sir. Chairman, members of the committee, Sam Forstag, F-O-R-S-T-A-G, here with the American Civil Liberties Union of Montana. We rise in opposition to this bill. As this committee weighs how you can most effectively use taxpayer dollars, I hope you will decide that the implementation of a ballot collection database for $200,000, which will simply and something we have proved not have the effect of suppressing the vote and making it more difficult to access the ballot, particularly for folks in tribal communities. This is something that multiple district courts in the states have weighed in on, that laws like this, specifically BIPA, which this law has one provision that is different from it, disproportionately impact rural Native American communities. Further, beyond the $200,000 specifically noted there, I hope you will take into consideration that a law nearly identical to this bill was struck down, permanently enjoined in Yellowstone District Court not 5 months prior. And when we are, and if we choose to pass a bill that we know will be immediately enjoined, that we know is going to be subject to a lawsuit, and that we know does not have a leg to stand on in court, that is building a structural imbalance, that is building costs into our system that will in fact take away from the money we have to spend to actually help Montana taxpayers, Montana citizens. And for those reasons, I hope you will vote no on House Bill 406. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Additional opponents? No more physical opponents. Virtual opponents?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we have Ruthie Barber. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ruthie Barbour, spelled B-A-R-B-O-U-R, and I'm here on behalf of Forward Montana. We are in opposition to House Bill 406. Ballot collection is at times the only way for many Montana voters to make their voices heard. And this bill will lead to litigation down the road that this fiscal note obviously does not take into account. In 2019, during the school board elections, we saw county elections officials implementing BIPA using different interpretations due to a lack of guidance and direction on how to implement this policy. Similar to 2019, this bill doesn't account for the additional funding and staffing likely needed to implement BIPA in a uniform way across the state. So please vote no. Thank you.
Thank you. Additional opponents?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we have Alana Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Alana Wolf. It's A-L-A-N-N-A-W-U-L-F with Big Sky 55 Plus. And I want to echo the testimony you've already heard in regards to the impact this bill will have, the impact this fiscal note will have, and I urge you to vote no. Thank you.
Thank you. Additional opponents?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we have Delia Kilsbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Dahlia Kilsbach, K-I-L-L-S-B-A-C-K, and I am the Deputy Political Director for Western Native Voice. And just to reiterate again that this fiscal note is, we would urge you to vote against it. Ballot collection is vital for tribal communities, as well as Montana was once the most litigated state for 20 years when it came to American Indian voting rights. And we believe that this bill here would just incur more expenses for our taxpayers. So again, please table this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Just a quick comment. It appears that some folks have the 406 bill in the 391 folder. Some have the 406 bill in the 406 folder. So if you can't find it in 406 folder, look at the 391 folder. With that, are there additional opponents?
Mr. Chair, there are no more hands being raised for opponents online.
Informational witnesses. No physical. Okay, there's a virtual.
Yes, Mr. Chair, we have Angela Nunn.
Angela.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. This is Angela Nunn, N-U-N-N. I'm the Operations Director at the Secretary of State's office, and I'm here for questions just related to the fiscal note.
Thank you, Angela. Is there additional informational?
Mr. Chair, there are no more hands being raised for informational witnesses.
Questions from the committee. With the reminder, we have several of these yet to do, so questions from the committee. Representative Hamilton.
I have to chew a little bit faster. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the sponsor, please.
For the sponsor.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the fiscal note, of course, really only focuses on the general fund or state special, but I'm wondering if you could very briefly talk about the fiscal impact on the local level for implementing this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Hamilton. The few that I have did talk to already do collections. They already have most of the things that they have to do anyway. They did not feel that this would be a big burden or costly. Thank you.
Thank you. Additional questions from the committee? Okay. Seeing none, let me check online. Seeing none there. That'll close the hearing on House Bill 406. And with that, I would entertain executive action on that bill. Vice Chair Homeland.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 406 do pass.
It's been moved. House Bill 406 do pass. I don't believe there's any amendments. So discussion on House Bill 406.
Question.
Question has been called. Roll call vote.
Vice Chair Holmland?
Yes.
Vice Chair Regeer?
Yes.
Vice Chair Cheetah?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cafaro?
No.
Representative Bartel?
Yes.
Representative Beattie?
Yes.
Representative Fuller?
Yes.
Representative Garner?
Yes.
Representative Hamilton?
No.
Representative Hopkins?
Aye.
Representative Keene?
No.
Representative Keough?
No.
Representative Kerr-Carpenter?
No.
Representative Mercer?
Yes.
Representative Moore?
Yes.
Representative Knave?
Yes.
Representative Patelis?
Yes.
Representative Reed?
Yes.
Representative Rickey?
Yes.
Representative Schillinger?
Yes.
Representative Stuart Paraguay?
No.
Representative Vinton? Representative Windy Boy?
Nope.
Chair Jones?
Yes.
I show the motion carries 17 to 7.
Bill passes 17-7. That ends our action on 406. We'll now take up action on 391.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. I'm Representative Frank Fleming, F-L-E-M-I-N-G, from Billings, Montana. I stand before you today on House Bill 391, which revises and enhances penalties for criminal distribution of dangerous drugs when a homicide has occurred. Unfortunately, there is not time for a revised fiscal note to be printed. I cannot guarantee statistical numbers, but based on the corrected fiscal note and the floor amendment, which removed the mandatory minimum, the following information is provided. The Department of Corrections will be unable to determine the entire fiscal impact of these cases because it cannot predict how many courts will impose the sentences and for what length of time, nor can the department predict how the Board of Pardons and Parole will handle these cases. The county attorneys know these cases will be rare and hard to prove. The prosecutor will not only have to prove from whom a person got the drugs, but also the specific drugs were the cause of death and that they were no other contributing factors to the death. Several Montana county attorneys have told me that they expect 5 to 7 convictions for the enhancement per year. Even though these cases will be difficult to prosecute, it'll be a useful tool when illegal drug distributors bring dangerous drugs into Montana's communities. In the original fiscal note, the Office of Public Defender made the following assumptions. There will be 7 cases in which the defendant is charged with the additional crime as contemplated in House Bill 391 and will require a public defender. Office of Public Defender assumes that each new case will require a minimum of 15 hours. The average hourly rate for an Office of Public Defender attorney is $68.48. If we assume the worst case scenario, that Office of Public Defender will actually require 30 hours per case, the math works out as follows. 7 cases times 30 hours equals 210 hours. 210 hours times 6848 equals 14,380. The revised Office of Public Defender fiscal note should be well under 15,000. Also, the Office of Public Defender will already be representing the defendant on these type of cases without the enhancement. The amount of increased costs are uncertain by the Office of Public Defender, in my opinion. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Are there physical proponents? Again, on fiscal, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Nanette Gilbertson, G-I-L-B-E-R-T-S-O-N, here today representing the Montana County Attorneys Association. I was able to listen to Representative Fleming in the hall regarding the fiscal note, and I concur with all that was said. You don't have a revised fiscal note in front of you. However, the amendment on the floor removed the mandatory minimum, which will greatly reduce the overall cost. This will not be used on a regular basis. However, it will be a tool for prosecutors when it is needed, when there's an overdose fatality that can be tied directly to the specific distributor and knowing that the specific drug was the cause of death. With that, I thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Additional physical? Are there virtual proponents?
Mr. Chair, there are no hands being raised for proponents.
Physical opponents? Virtual opponents? Informational physical? Informational physical? Informational, I see hand raised, a couple hands raised. Informational on virtual?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we have Rhonda Lindquist.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Go ahead.
Yes. Okay. Rhonda Lindquist, R-H-O-N-D-A-L-I-N-D-Q-U-I-S-T, and I'm the director for the Office of the Public Defender, and we're here as informational witnesses for House Bill 391.
Okay.
And then, Mr. Chair, we have a Cynthia Wolkin.
Ms. Wolkin.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Cynthia Wolkin, W-O-L-K-E-N. I'm the Deputy Director at the Montana Department of Corrections, and I'm here with our Fiscal Manager, Jody Stone, and available for questions on the fiscal note. Thank you.
Thank you. No additional informational hands up. Questions from the committee. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the sponsor, please.
For the sponsor.
Mr. Chairman, Representative.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fleming, we're moving fast here, so I'm maybe a little bit behind in loss. I'm not sure I understand why changing, you've attributed the change in the minimum sentence to less costs, but we're still going to be prosecuting the same number of potential people. We are sending them, if they're convicted, we're sending the same number of people to prison. I don't see where's there a reduced cost in this time frame.
Well, when the mandatory minimum was in, Mr. Chair, Representative, when the initial note came out, the mandatory minimum was still in place, and they'd be in prison for a minimum of 10 years. Now they can be sentenced to 0 to 100 years, so that equation that they would be in there actually longer in the prison, that's what had the cost so high.
Follow up. Mr. Chair, Representative Fleming, I get that part. In this time frame we're looking at, it doesn't seem to me it should change any cost because we've reduced the 10-year minimum, but they may still be there for 3 or 4 years, which would fully put them on this fiscal note. Am I missing something?
The fiscal note for the Department of Corrections would go up, but it's hard to say what those sentences would be, and I think they had a little trouble with it last time, and maybe the Department of Corrections would be better to ask that.
Right. Can we refer that to?
Redirect,
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
To Ms. Wolkin?
Ms. Wolkin, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, so yes, we haven't officially completed a revised fiscal note, but typically for new crimes, if there is a mandatory minimum, we take that into consideration. And without a mandatory minimum, it's harder to calculate costs. We can anticipate future costs, but we cannot calculate that given the wide sentencing range and the impact of decisions by the Board of Pardons and Parole and other individuals.
Thank you. Additional questions from the committee? Seeing none, if the sponsor would like to close.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, committee members, I think this is a good bill. We did take the mandatory minimum out. It made it better. I do believe that will reduce the cost dramatically. And thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. That closes the hearing on, I guess it's 391. And with that, Vice Chair Holmland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 391 do pass.
It's been moved due pass on 391. I know there are not an amendment, any amendments. I would note that there is a amendment that will cause a new fiscal note that's potentially lower that will catch it in the Senate if it so makes it there. With that, questions from the committee or discussion questions from the committee. Representative, I couldn't decide which one of you was going to talk. Representative Hamilton. Representative Stuart Paraguay. I thought Representative Hamilton was raising his head.
I had him wave for it for me. Mr. Chairman, I don't know if it's really going to cost the state any fewer dollars. And the reason is... unfortunately, you know, we'll wind, it says 34 cases, having dealt with some things and the costs, particularly in drugs, and it's, you know, it's prescription drugs, it's all of these things, all of the above. I think we're going to have a sticker shock down the road, to be honest with you. Reason why I say that is that, you know, we're... there's a court case that's in the Supreme Court, and it's dealing with drug dealers, because that's who we're talking about here. They have deep pockets, and I think it's going to cost us more. So I'm going to have to be a no in terms of the potential fiscal impact it's going to be upon the state. I wish we could just round them all up and throw away the keys.
Thank you. Additional discussion? Additional discussion? Representative Beattie.
Mr. Chairman, just a comment, and maybe a question will come out of it, but it seems to me that if we're in a position where we're contemplating prosecuting this sort of a crime, that we would there would also be ample cause to be prosecuting the drug-related offense that is related to it. So it seems to me that the you know, the holding of this person and the defense of this person would, you know, is already ongoing, so there would only be an incremental cost associated with the additional charge. I don't have a question. It was just a comment.
That's fine on executive. Additional discussion? Seeing none, let's just roll call vote these.
Vice Chair Holmland?
No.
Vice Chair Regeer? Vice Chair Cheetah?
Yes.
Vice Chair Cafaro?
No.
Representative Bartel?
Yes.
Representative Beattie?
Yes.
Representative Fuller?
Yes.
Representative Garner?
Yes.
Representative Hamilton?
No.
Representative Hopkins?
Aye.
Representative Keene?
No.
Representative Keogh?
No.
Representative Kurt Carpenter?
No.
Representative Mercer?
Yes.
Representative Moore?
Yes.
Representative Nave?
Yes.
Representative Patelis?
Yes.
Representative Reed?
Yes.
Representative Rickey?
Yes.
Representative Schillinger?
Yes.
Representative Stuart Paraguay?
No.
Representative Vinton?
Yes, by proxy.
Representative Windy Boy?
No.
Chairman Jones?
Yes.
Show the motion passes 16 to 8.
Motion passes 16 to 8. With that, we're moving on to House Bill 404. Representative Patelis.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name's Jimmy Patelis, P-A-T-E-L-I-S. Representative from House District 52 in Billings. We just received on HB 404, which was the oil and gas revenue for school districts in oil and gas areas. And we just received that. And at this time, I guess, I think it's a good bill. But since we did just receive it, I would respectfully ask that the committee table HB 404 at this time until we have more time to look at the fiscal note.
Representative Patelis, you wish to have the bill tabled now?
Yes.
It'll run into some deadline problems, right, if we don't act upon it now, because I'm not technically supposed to extend these non-appropriation bills, which this one is, past their initial hearings. Right? It's not an appropriation bill, so it'll make it technically against our rules to bring it up. Am I correct on this? Isn't labeled as an appropriation bill? If this is a general...
If it's not an appropriate... Excuse me, Mr. Chair, I guess I am confused. If it's not an appropriation bill, what do we do? What is it doing here then, I guess? So
three bills, there are three styles bills. They're labeled in the system. You can look on the system.
Okay.
They either have an R as a revenue bill, an A as an appropriations bill, or they're labeled as a general bill. General bills can't have a fiscal note, but general bills are still subjected to the 45-day transmittal deadline. This is a general bill.
Okay.
And so, I mean, I'm happy enough to table it because I'm opposed to this bill, but I just didn't want to table your bill and not share with you that I wanted to make sure you were understanding what it is you were doing.
That's a good point. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I guess with that, my buddy there, huh? Well, no, so we're done. I mean, we either have today or tomorrow, right? That's it.
We're hoping not to meet tomorrow. So, yes, right. we're out of day.
Well, I'm not going to meet tomorrow either. So let's just proceed then, I guess. So Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is the amended fiscal note did just come back and today, and is a zero impact the first biennium. So after that, it's $297,000 each. And after that, it does go from, right now it's at 130%, and it goes to 150% in 2024, and then also 150 in 2025, and then it goes to 170%. So it's a difference of 30% next biennium, and then after that it's another 20%. So with that, and I just to stick on a fiscal note, I'm not going to go through the whole scenario of oil and gas districts, how they're affected when oil and gas gets going and booming, and when it doesn't, the need for to continue to straight line it across the board. So with that, I guess I'll take any questions.
Okay. Are there physical proponents? On the fiscal note, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. E.J. Redding, R-E-D-D-I-N-G, here today on behalf of the Bainville Public School. This is not the first time I've stood in front of this committee and Mr. Jones looking to try to help oil and gas districts that are impacted unlike any other districts in the state. I would love to have a debate on the policy of helping oil and gas schools when they need help, but the fact of the matter is the chairman does not like our new formula, but we'll be back, and we'll be back again, and we'll be back again, and maybe again this session. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Redding. Additional proponents. Online proponents. Opponents.
Mr. Chair.
Sorry, Anthony. I look at the hands there myself, but so I should probably wait for you. I apologize. Are there any online opponents?
Mr. Chair, there are no online opponents.
Thank you. Informational? Okay, informational online.
Mr. Chair, we have Paul Taylor.
Mr. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Paul Taylor, and I work for the OPI. I could answer questions associated with this fiscal note. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor. Additional informational witnesses.
There are no more hands being raised for informational witnesses, Mr. Chair.
Okay. With that, questions from the committee. Questions from the committee? Representative Beattie.
Mr. Chairman, I guess this is a question for the sponsor or for Mr. Redding, one or the other. So I'll ask the question, and then we can determine who's going to answer it. So my question is, currently, under current law, these districts can retain may retain 130% of the maximum budget. And I guess what I don't understand is for what reason is this not sufficient? And why is the what justifies the increase over the next several years?
I can attempt it. As Mr. Redding, he can also come in and talk. Mr. Chair, Representative, I think that's a good question. I think what happens is with the gas and oil go like this, and it when it dips, it dips. And I think what happens is the damage to the roads, you know, the prices that they had to pay for school teachers and housing, the salaries for plumbers and electricians that double, the $8 a gallon milk doesn't necessarily go away when it dips down this low. And I think that's what their need to bring that up a little bit more, to flatline that, to keep it straight. And I guess it's a need that those particular districts feel that they need that little some extra to keep that straight line going across.
Thank you. So I think, as I Mr. Chairman, so as I understand it, I presume then that the 130% for some reason isn't adequate for them, and somehow they've been able to demonstrate that to somebody's satisfaction.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, that's correct. In fact, we had testimony from the Bainville School Superintendent that they were concerned that they were going to be able to meet some of the needs of their particular school district because oil has dipped so far. So that's really the gist of it, Representative, Mr. Chair.
Additional questions from the committee? Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the sponsor.
Mr. Chair, Representative.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patelis. I think during the interim in the Legislative Finance Committee, we took a look at, and I may need to be corrected here, sort of the mills in some of these districts that are sort of resource rich, you might say, or resource poor, as you're saying at the moment. And it seems like a lot of times with that resource money, they have avoided charging mills to their property owners, substituting this other money for that. So why wouldn't we expect them to charge some mills, mill levy, residential homeowners, like happens in other parts of the state when we have fluctuations in economic conditions?
Good question. I agree. There are some of the areas that don't run mill levies, and but my understanding is through my involvement with this particular bill is that they're in a situation where they're not going to be able to do that. Now, keep in mind, I guess also their concern is the everything that happens with oil and gas. Also, they don't have any other industry in most of these areas. They don't have no diversity. So that's what they depend on. And you're correct. I think Mr. Chairman's or somebody's handout here is pretty clear that there are some areas that have not run mill levies. So I guess it's when it gets that bad, they feel that they should be able to keep their tax base local and use that revenue for local taxes, what they gain from the oil and gas industry.
Additional questions from the committee? Representative Wendy Boyd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for Mr. Taylor.
Mr. Taylor, please.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wendy Boyd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Taylor, under the existing structure, say, for example, we have a big boom again and say that barrels are up to $200 and we have a surplus. What type of structure is existing right now, and how does that play out? Is that does the cost that is over and above go to other school districts or anything?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wendy Boy, under current law, under Section 20-9-310, funds, oil and gas retention of school districts is capped at 130% of their maximum general fund budget, with some exceptions for areas that have anticipated enrollment increases. Excess funds that surpass that 130%, I believe, are remitted to the state's guarantee account currently, Mr. Chair.
Okay, additional questions from the committee? Seeing none, does the monitor like to close?
Mr. Chair, I would just like to clarify something. I think it was Representative Hamilton asked. It's my understanding, I guess I forgot about this, that oil is not part of the mill base. So maybe that clarifies a little bit more too, Representative. But with that, in closing, I understand everybody's concern, but I guess I can see the needs of some of these oil and gas districts of, again, not to reemphasize, but the prices that go up, the damages to the road, the scenario I gave about the bus, that they brought a brand new bus in Bainville and they wouldn't even warranty a brand new bus because the roads were so damaged and used from the oil and gas industry. So with that, appreciate everybody's concern and vote yes. Thank you.
Thank you. That closes the hearing on House Bill 404. Vice Chair Holman.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 404 do pass.
House Bill 404 is being moved do pass. I know there is no amendments. I would like to explain, because Representative Patelis is correct. I did add the sheet that you'll find in the folder. This sheet is from, and Mr. Taylor will be able to speak to it, there's a file called OPI Budout. It touches on the costs of every single school system in the state. And it's multiple lines and multiple columns, but I compressed it just to the ones that I figured would help explain my concerns with changing this formula. And so one, I would like to point out, the yellow over Fallon is incorrect. I had actually fixed that on a later sheet, but had not got the fix to Joe. So there's the what I simply did in this file after I compressed it is I picked up schools of a similar population sign next to the schools that are currently at the 130% cap. And so Richland is obviously at the 130, Borson Elementary is at the cap. It's got 9 A and Bs. It is bringing in $149,235 before it has to export money. That means it's getting $46,150 per student in that school. And I would point out on the bottom of the sheet, the average per student in the state is $12,000. It has chosen, and it is within its choice, to put this into the formula and offset mill, so it is milling 15 mills in that area. I'll go back in time a bit and say, when we set this formula at 130%, we could not find, even in the oil boom, justification that 130% didn't cover costs. We simply couldn't find it. And we had to bring all the information. Now, if oil were to boom again, some of the schools in light yellow might get more money until they hit the 130% cap. But talking about what the 130 cap is, because that's what we're talking about moving. We're talking about more than doubling this cap. Richland or Lambert Elementary is bringing in $960,000 for its 84 students. It has completely eliminated millage in that district. Now, you can look at the schools around it, what they're charging, and the mills they're putting in. And it's doing $22,494. You'll find an elementary school, if we actually did the cost on it, it's more than probably double the elementary average. Lambert High School, same thing. They're making choices, and they're more than welcome to the choices. But when you look at what is capable and what it's bringing in, it's hard to argue against. Then there's the argument that, well, when oil booms, the state doesn't help. Let's pick, when oil crashes, the state doesn't help. Let's pick Savage Elementary. Savage, if you go back there, does not have a lot of oil and gas in its districts. So currently, areas in the state that have high tax value, or potentially some of these areas that are exporting, are sending Savage $144,938. The equalization formula transfers money from those areas of high tax value to those areas of low. Above 130%, Eastern Montana exports. Below it, and if they have enough students, they can receive. And so, and Fallon, which I mistakenly put in yellow initially, is not quite at 130%. But again, you can see it's close, and you can see the millage that they're charging relative to the mills of other schools. And it does cost more. You can see the small schools on this list, the ones that I listed, do make more money than the big schools for A and B. The big schools have some economies of scale. But anyway, just an explanation of why I handed this out. You can, Mr. Taylor can certainly speak to it because it's a 400-line sheet, but I tried to compress it to just relevant data. And so that is my explanation while I will be opposed to this bill. Discussion from the committee.
Mr. Chair, I move a substitute motion to table.
Non-debatable motion. I will allow one objection to that if. Okay, non-debatable motion, roll call vote.
Vice Chair Holmland?
Yes.
Vice Chair Regeer?
No.
Vice Chair Cheetah?
No.
Vice Chair Cafaro?
Yes.
Representative Bartel?
No.
Representative Beattie?
Yes.
Representative Fuller?
No.
Representative Garner?
Yes.
Representative Hamilton?
Yes.
Representative Hopkins?
Yes.
Representative Keene?
Yes.
Representative Keough?
Yes.
Representative Kerr Carpenter?
Yes.
Representative Mercer?
Yes.
Representative Moore?
Yes.
Representative Nave?
No.
Representative Patelis?
No.
Representative Reed?
No.
Representative Rickey?
No.
Representative Schillinger?
No.
Representative Stuart Paragoy?
Yes.
Representative Vinton?
No, by proxy.
Representative Windy Boy?
Yes.
Chairman Jones?
Yes.
1410.
I have got the motion is tied 12-12. No? 1410.
Motion to table passes 14-10. Okay, with that, we'll start our hearing on House Bill 46. House Bill 46.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since we just heard House Bill 46 on the floor, I'll go right to the fiscal note. As you can see in the fiscal note, there is minimal impact during the coming biennium, and the inflation adjustments kick in for fiscal year 2024 and beyond. The reason that there's any impact at all is because if, as you look at the bill, the dollar amount per A and B that is established in the bill can't be rounded down to any to tenths of cents. And so that is why there is a modest impact during the coming biennium.
Thank you, Representative Beattie. Are there proponents? No on-site, online proponents.
Mr. Chair, there are no hands being raised for proponents.
Okay, opponents?
No on-site
proponents,
Mr. Chair.
On-site virtual. Virtual opponents. Sorry.
There are no hands being raised, Mr. Chair.
Informational. Informational virtual, we have a hand raised.
Yes, Mr. Chair, we have Paul Taylor.
Mr. Taylor.
Again, sorry about that. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, my name is Paul Taylor. I work for OPI, and again, I can answer questions associated with the fiscal note. Thank you much.
Thank you, sir. No other informational discussion amongst the committee. questions from the committee, I should say. Too much back-to-back. Questions from the committee. Okay, seeing none. Representative Beatty.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for a great hearing.
Or at least a brief one. Vice Chair Holmland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 46 do pass.
Now, discussion or questions amongst the committee. Okay, I guess seeing none, we'll just roll call vote.
Vice Chair Holmland?
Yes.
Vice Chair Regeer?
No.
Vice Chair Cheetah?
No.
Vice Chair Cafaro?
Yes.
Representative Bartel?
No.
Representative Beatty?
Yes.
Representative Fuller?
No.
Representative Garner?
Yes.
Representative Hamilton?
Yes.
Representative Hopkins?
He was here. Yes, by proxy.
Yes, by proxy.
Representative Keene?
Yes.
Representative Keel?
Yes.
Representative Kerr Carpenter?
Yes.
Representative Mercer?
No.
Representative Moore?
No.
Representative Knave?
No.
Representative Patelis?
No.
Representative Reed?
No.
Representative Rickey?
No.
Representative Schillinger?
No.
Representative Stuart Paraguay?
Yes.
Representative Vinton?
Vin votes yes by proxy.
Representative Windy Boy?
Yes.
Chair Jones?
Yes. Passes 13 to 11. Okay. We're now on House Bill 206. Representative Beatty.
House Bill 206, we heard on the floor, House Bill 206 is a fiscal note, as you can see, has a positive impact on the general fund for the this coming biennium and a slight negative impact going forward. The key reason for this is the implementation of cost sharing between the districts of residence and the state. This particular paradigm for funding tuition for children that are attending a group or foster homes or children that are being educated in resident facilities takes the sole responsibility from the state and places it, as I said earlier, part of that burden on the district of residence. Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Are there physical proponents? I don't believe so. Would you mind checking, Vice Chair Holmland? Okay, virtual proponents.
Mr. Chair, there are no hands being raised for proponents.
No one out there at all, so no physical opponents. Are there virtual opponents?
Mr. Chair, there are no hands being raised for opponents.
Okay, informational. Mr. Kenneth Bailey.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Ken Bailey, B-A-I-L-E-Y, with the Office of Public Instruction, available to answer questions about the fiscal note for this bill.
Additional informational?
There are no additional informational, Mr. Chair.
Okay. With that, then, we will take questions from the committee. Questions from the committee. Seeing none here, let me check online. No questions from the committee. So that will, I guess with no question from the committee, Representative Beatty, would you like to close?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this is good, sound fiscal policy. It works for the in-state facilities that participated in putting this bill together and is also supported by the governor's office. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative B. That closes the hearing on House Bill 206. Vice Chair Holmland.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 206 do pass.
Heard the motion do pass on House Bill 206 by Vice Chair Holmland. Is there discussion amongst the committee? Discussion amongst the committee.
Question.
Question's been called. Roll call vote.
Vice Chair Holmland?
Yes.
Vice Chair Regeer?
Yes.
Vice Chair Cheetah?
Yes.
Vice Chair Caffaro?
Yes.
Representative Bartel?
Yes.
Representative Beattie?
Yes.
Representative Fuller?
Yes.
Representative Garner?
Yes.
Representative Hamilton?
Yes.
Representative Hopkins?
Aye.
Representative Keene?
Yes.
Representative Keough?
Yes.
Representative Kerr Carpenter?
Yes.
Representative Mercer?
Yes.
Representative Moore?
Yes.
Representative Nave?
Yes.
Representative Patelis?
Yes.
Representative Reed?
Yes.
Representative Rickey?
Yes.
Representative Schillinger?
Yes.
Representative Stuart Paragoy?
Yes.
Representative Vinton?
Yes, by proxy.
Representative Windy Boy?
Yes.
Chair Jones?
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously.
Bill passes unanimous. I guess you should have tried it that way. So House Bill 206 passes unanimous, and we're on House Bill 336. Hopefully the sponsor is near. Representative?
Good afternoon, members of the Appropriations Committee. My name is Brandon Lear, last name spelled L-E-R. I'm from Richland County. I come before you today with House Bill 336. We put an amendment on it with a contingency. So with that, now for us to enact this law, it either has to be okayed by the federal government or we have to win in a court of appropriate jurisdiction. With that amendment, there will be a revised fiscal note that it should be zero. The reason there was a fiscal note on it before is because the federal government said if we enact this, they'll take away the funding. Now we either have to win in a court case or they have to say this is okay. So that fiscal note should be zero.
Thank you, Representative. Are there proponents? Physical? None on site. Online proponents? Opponents?
Miss.
Opponents, virtual.
Mr. Chair, there are no hands being raised.
Informational. Informational and virtual.
Mr. Chair, there are no hands being raised for informational.
Okay, question from the committee. Questions from the committee. Seeing no questions from the committee, and let me check online to be safe. Representative, if you'd like to close on your bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I urge you to pass.
Thank you. Vice Chair Holmland.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 336 do pass.
You've heard the motion by Vice Chair Holmland of do pass. There are no amendments. Discussion on the bill. And I would note the sponsor indicated the potential for a zero fiscal note arriving in the Senate. Discussion? Okay, seeing none. I'm going to try this and say, seeing none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Oh, geez. Okay, if you're opposed, hold your hand up. I should have roll called. Representative Hamilton is opposed. Representative Hopkins is opposed. Representative Holmland, you're opposed.
Yes.
We have three opposed. Hopkins, Holmland, and Hamilton. Okay. Hopkins, Holmland, and Hamilton are opposed. So it passes 21-3. Okay, I believe we're on 484, if we can find the bill. House Bill 484, Representative Gillette. Let's move 484 down the list, and somebody please text Representative Gillette that her bill is up, and we'll move to House Bill 497. That sponsor is here, Representative Mercer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bill Mercer, House District 46 in Billings. This is the bill we just heard, and Mr. Treem was kind enough to provide you with the gray bill that reflects the amendments that were adopted on the floor. A couple of quick observations about the fiscal note. The amendment, as I said on the floor, I've had the chance to talk with different members of this committee about the quarterly meeting requirement, and we were trying to think about how we could drive those costs down. And one way to do that is to do some of these meetings, in this case, no fewer than half by video conference. Another thing we've discussed preliminarily is trying to co-locate these meetings, or co-time these meetings, if you will, with the LFC, when a number of these members would probably be coming to Helena anyway. And I think that the fiscal note does reflect some costs that we're going to drive down. This is not going to be a zero fiscal note, because we are going to have some salary time, we are going to have some travel time, and we're going to have some staff time. But I do think it is overstated at this point. I do think these expenditures are things that are pretty important, and I think the people in this room understand that more than really anyone, that it's odd that we do so much to try to get into, in a granular way, to what's happening in the agencies, and we do that and then we stop. So I think it's money well spent. I think it's going to help us improve our work in future legislative sessions, when we have not sort of lost the thread in terms of what the agencies are doing. And so I concede there'll be a cost. I think this overstates it, but I think it's money that needs to be spent. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Mercer. Let's do the proponent dance. Virtual proponents.
Mr. Chair, there are no hands being raised for proponents.
No on-site opponents. Virtual opponents.
Mr. Chair, there are no hands being raised for opponents.
Informational. No on-site informational. No virtual.
Mr. Chair, there are no virtual informational witnesses.
Okay, questions are from the committee. Questions from the committee. We just heard the bill, so probably not. Okay, Representative Mercer, would you close on your bill? Okay, we have closed on 497. With that, Vice Chair Holmland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 497 do pass.
Heard the motion do pass on 497, and so is there discussion on the bill? Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I said very briefly on the floor, I do commend the sponsor on this bill, because I think the concept is really a good concept to begin with, but there's a whole lot of detail in this bill that we really did not vet in the policy committee, because we sort of ran out of time. Sponsor did offer to make some amendments that we just talked about in about a three-minute time period. So I once again appreciate that cooperation. But there's still a lot of work that needs to be done on this bill. And I'm just loath to pass it out of here and hand it over to the Senate, not knowing what might happen there, despite his best intentions. And in particular, I would object to Section 2, which is about the make up the interim committee. The this is a completely imbalanced committee, unlike other interim committees. Would have six in Section F if we repeated Section F, and it's not in here. We would end up with, forgot what the numbers are, but something like 6-2 with one party versus the other. So it just seems like there's a whole lot of things that need to be changed in here, and it's a good concept. It just came in too late to really be what we'd want it to be.
Okay, additional discussion amongst the committee? Additional discussion? I guess I would. Oh, Representative Mercer, go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just going to say that I am committed to trying to continue to work on it. I think the observations that Representative Hamilton made here are really more on policy grounds than fiscal grounds. I think we can continue to try to figure out a way to drive the fiscal costs down. And I think trying to take the existing core of the subcommittees and then add two people from policy committees to really focus on oversight is a good expenditure of the dollars. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, additional discussion? I would just comment, I also have talked with the Representative Mercer on this and his willingness to amend it to get some fiscal down in the Senate. I do believe this is a good concept. The Legislative Finance Committee does come in. It is a 50-50 committee, but it is not directly linked to these topics. We're kind of a broad committee, and so while potentially we could have some of the meetings virtual on this committee, as you had suggested, or even potentially right before the LFC committees, having the existing A, B, C, D, F structure be able to continue to track that their expectations came through at least has merit to continue on, in my estimation, to further discussion and see if we can flesh this out better in the Senate. Just through my reasoning why I will be supporting this. Since I don't want to limit discussion, in case that prompted anything, is there additional discussion? Okay, seeing that, let's just roll call vote the bill.
Vice Chair Holmland?
Yes.
Vice Chair Regeer?
Yes.
Vice Chair Cheetah?
Yes.
Vice Chair Cafaro?
Yes.
Representative Bartel?
Yes.
Representative Beattie?
Yes.
Representative Fuller?
Yes.
Representative Garner?
Yes.
Representative Hamilton?
No.
Representative Hopkins?
Yes, by proxy.
Representative Keene?
No.
Representative Keough?
No.
Representative Kerr Carpenter?
Yes.
Representative Mercer?
Yes.
Representative Moore?
Yes.
Representative Nave?
Yes.
Representative Patelis?
Yes.
Representative Reed?
Yes.
Representative Rickey?
Yes.
Representative Schillinger?
Yes.
Representative Stuart Paraguay?
No.
Representative Vinton?
Yes, by proxy.
Representative Windy Boy?
No.
Chairman Jones?
Yes.
Motion carries 19-5.
With that, I understand Representative Gillette has shown up, so we'll swing to House Bill 484. Representative Gillette.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I guess I'm not, I haven't been to one of these before, so you'll have to just.
we don't talk policy. We try to talk stuff that's on your fiscal note. Yeah, effectively, it's all about explaining why this fiscal note is worthy of spending this money.
Ah, got it. Understood. So in the fiscal note, what you'll note is that for any health plan to come on, there's about $60,000 that's required, a one-time fee to build the program, the interface. So for the university system, health insurance for the students, and then also for our state plan, that's where that $60,000 piece comes from. After that, there's a 35 cents per member per month fee. Just as a general overview of this project, back when we originally started it, we received $19 million from the federal government to put this, the HIE together. And then we had a 10% match, so $1 million match from private funding. It actually, they've been pretty successful in not using state funds for that match, but getting private industry to pay for that 10% match. Big picture wise, the HIE, it kind of pairs out to be one third is paid for by, and this is sustainability into the future, one third is paid by Medicaid, one third by payers like Blue Cross, Blue Shield, or the state plan, and then another one third by providers long term. And so that's how it goes. One thing that you won't see in the fiscal note, and you heard me mention this in on the House floor today, is that there's just substantial cost savings when states really utilize their HIE fully. You just reduce duplication of services, of course, medical errors, which are quite costly, especially when you talk about people being given the wrong treatment, the wrong surgeries, the wrong medication. Medical errors account for a substantial amount of healthcare costs. So that, of course, you're not going to see in the fiscal note, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, Representative. With that, do we have any physical proponents of the fiscal note? Virtual proponents. Somebody's coming. I apologize. Remember, we're on the fiscal note, please.
Looking at the time here. Good afternoon, members of the committee and Mr. Chair Jones. My name is Jean Branscum. That's Branscum. I'm the CEO of the Montana Medical Association. That's what I'm in front of you on behalf of today. That's the association that represents physicians in the state with about 1,400 members. I'm also on the board of Big Sky Care Connect, and Big Sky Care Connect is the health information exchange, the state-designated health information exchange in Montana. Just want to weigh in to support the fiscal note as it's written, and I think the good representative had talked about the charges that we are putting forth to make this sustainable in the long run. Our intent is a setting up of a 501c3 is a non-reliance on state government funds in the long run. That's how we developed our state sustainability budget and why we spent a year looking at that before we even opened the doors. We launched earlier this year. One thing the fiscal note doesn't show that I just want to point out is the significant savings that comes from a health information exchange. That's not reflective here. She would like to see that, but we know that it reduces 30-day hospital readmissions. It avoids unnecessary tests and procedures. It streamlines administrative tasks. We do all this by fax now. This will be a lot easier to get records from one place to the other. It reconciles or helps to reconcile medications, and it also identifies gaps in patient care, so you can take care of those early. Thank you.
Thank you. Additional proponents? Virtual proponents?
Mr. Chair, there are no hands being raised.
Okay. Opponents? Virtual opponents?
Mr. Chair, there are no hands being raised for opponents.
Informational? Informational, virtual?
Mr. Chair, we have an Amber Thorvilson.
Amber?
Hello, Mr. Chair. My name is Amber Thorvilson. I'm with the Department of Administration, Healthcare and Benefits Division, and I'm here for questions that you may have on the fiscal note.
Thank you, Amber. Additional informational?
There is no more hands being raised for informational, Mr. Chair.
Okay, with that, then, questions from the committee. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for Ms. Thorvilson.
Ms. Thorvilson. Well, I'm going to try to say Amber.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Thorvilson, my question is the cost of these costs that are listed on the fiscal note, the 213, the 187 in the first couple of years, are borne by the beneficiaries of the health care plan, or who's paying for this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton, you are correct. The health plan collects money through, of course, the state share and through member contributions. It's these this funding that will pay for these costs.
Follow up. Mr. Chair, Ms. Thorvaldsen, I'm sorry, I should have asked the question a little more thoroughly, and that is, how much will it change the cost of premiums for these folks?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton, this isn't expected to change the premiums for these members. The health plan has, I guess you could say, a big enough amount of money coming in that this by itself would not change the premiums for the members.
Thank you.
Additional questions from the committee. Representative Moore.
Yes, question. I'll start with the sponsor.
Representative Gillette.
Mr. Chair, Representative.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gillette, some confusion, it would be only minor perhaps on the fiscal note, but on the floor of the House there was this opt-in, opt-out conversation. Mm-hmm. When I read the bill, it looks like there's no determination around that and that the commissioner shall provide all information to this health database. And so I'm just wanting some clarity as to whether there's an opt-in or opt-out on behalf of a participant. Just it'd only be 35 cents a month, it looks like, as it might roll through here, but just to get some clarity on that.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yeah, there definitely is, and I'd be happy to pull that opt-in committee hearing. We shared the form, the actual form, where people opt out. The reality is most people don't opt out. So my guess is when they were doing the fiscal note is that it is so small and negligible, I'm thinking that they just don't calculate that in. Or they just predict the worst case scenario, what would happen if nobody opted out. I don't think they have maybe a sense of, maybe Ms. Branscombe could speak to, you know, in a given health plan, what percent of people opt out. But I would suspect that it's pretty negligible. Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Additional questions from the committee? Oh, Representative Farrell, you did raise your hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Representative, while the fiscal impact of your bill is pretty minimal, I'm wondering if you could tell me how much money has been invested in this project and over what period of time, because it seems like this project comes back over with and over with, asking for money, and in the past it's been a lot more. You mentioned it on the floor, at least one funding source and dollar amount. If you could go over that a little bit, I'd appreciate it.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I might have to ask Jean because she has, or Ms. Branscombe, because she has a more holistic view of all the funds that have come in. But to my knowledge, as I understand it, there's just been one $19 million grant that was received from the federal government. And then the remaining, as I said, the remaining 10%, the $1 million was from, I think, Blue Cross Blue Shield, or payers got together and came up with that remaining piece. I'm not sure if that answers your question, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative.
You want to redirect, or that's sufficient?
Mr. Chairman, I do not.
Okay. Additional questions from the committee? Representative Keene.
Thank you. Question for Gene Branson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Representative Keene.
Thank you, Gene. The question I have is, if we're paying a couple hundred thousand dollars a year, how does this help your organization stabilize health costs? What does it do to help the people of the state and university system? How does it benefit them?
Mr. Chair, Representative Keene, that's a great question. In regards to the expenditure for this, it allows for care coordination and for communication across providers. And so I'll just give you one example as to what happens at a physician level. If there is a critical access hospital that transports an individual to a larger hospital, many times because of the case that's been done, the physician at the larger hospital will do lab tests, for example. And they do lab tests because it takes about 3 days to get perhaps the lab tests from the critical access hospital. What the HIE does is it provides real-time information. So the benefit there in terms of cost is that with real-time information, that hospital, say it's Helena, doesn't have to repeat those tests. They'll just be able to look in the health information exchange and get those lab results, and they won't have to do those duplicate tests. So that's a benefit to both the patient and obviously to costs down the road, particularly when it comes to imaging, which can be high. You can save significant dollars not having to repeat those examinations.
No, thank you.
Thank you. Additional questions? Seeing none online, would the sponsor like to close, please?
One thing, thank you, Mr. Chair. One thing that I thought is worth mentioning is the reason that you don't see Medicaid listed in there is that we already had a plan to incorporate our Medicaid program into this. So this is really where healthcare, especially taxpayer-funded healthcare, was moving in that direction anyhow. And thank you for considering this bill.
Thank you. That closes the hearing on House Bill 484. Vice Chair Holmland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 484 do pass.
Been moved do pass on House Bill 484. Discussion amongst the committee. Seeing none, roll call vote.
Vice Chair Holmland?
Yes.
Vice Chair Regeer?
Yes.
Vice Chair Cheetah?
Yes.
Vice Chair Cafaro?
Yes.
Representative Bartel?
Yes.
Representative Beatty?
Yes.
Representative Fuller?
No.
Representative Garner?
Yes.
Representative Hamilton?
Yes, by proxy.
Representative Hopkins?
Yes, by proxy.
Yes, by proxy.
Representative Keene?
Yes.
Representative Keough?
Yes.
Representative Kerr Carpenter?
Yes.
Representative Mercer?
Yes.
Representative Moore?
No.
Representative Knave?
Yes.
Representative Patelis?
Yes.
Representative Reed?
No.
Representative Rickey?
Yes.
Representative Schillinger?
Yes.
Representative Stuart Paragoy?
Yes.
Representative Vinton?
Yes, by proxy.
Representative Windy Boy?
Yes, by proxy.
Chairman Jones?
Yes.
Motion passes 21-3.
Motion passes 21-3. And we are on House Bill 553. I believe that's Mr. Patelis, who I hope we can treat better this time.
Chairman, I hope so too. My name's Jimmy Patelis, P-A-T-E-L-I-S, House Representative in Billings, Montana. This is we just heard this bill. Obviously, this is a positive financial impact, almost $1.5 million the first year. The Department of Corrections identified about 1,200, almost 1,300. Defendants that would qualify retroactively if this bill passed. However, I want to make sure that I know this is a Appropriations Committee. This was not done because it's to save money by any means, not one bit. This is a pro-public safety bill. But with that, I'll entertain any questions.
Okay, proponents. Online proponents?
Mr. Chair, there are no hands being raised for proponents.
Opponents? Online? Virtual?
Mr. Chair, there are no hands being raised for opponents.
Okay, no informational, physical, virtual informational.
Mr. Chair, we have Tina Wright.
Tina.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tina Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T. I'm the accounting supervisor for the Office of the State Public Defender, and I'm available for questions regarding the fiscal note.
Additional informational?
Mr. Chair, there are no more hands raised for informational.
Okay, questions from the committee. Questions from the committee. Seeing none, if the sponsor would like to close. Sponsor has closed on the bill. That ends the hearing on House Bill 553. Vice Chair Homeland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 553 do pass.
You've heard the motion of Vice Chair Homeland, do pass 553. Is there discussion on the bill? Representative Caffaro? Oh, sorry. I saw you turn your mic on. Discussion on the bill? Okay. Seeing none, do we need a roll call vote this bill? Okay. In that case, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Wendy Boyd votes aye by proxy.
Representative Vinton votes aye by proxy.
So I believe that's 24, right? So passes unanimous. With that, I believe we fairly quickly went through a whole lot of bills. Representative Kirk Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have one final bill on my desk, 494.
Yeah.
It didn't drop. It didn't end up dropping down to us, so we have to print bills that we assume that will be sent down, and apparently 494 did not end up making the drop down, so it's going direct. Okay, Representative Keene.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It doesn't meet the criteria, so it ought to just pass out of the House, right?
494. Well, that's what I understood, yeah. that it didn't might meet the criteria after an amendment, that it just passed across. We didn't have to come in on it. So at this point, we don't have any drops, I know, coming this afternoon. And we'll see what tomorrow brings. We have some leeway on the very last day of all that we can hear these bills, potentially, depending which ones they are, on the Tuesday when we get back after transmittal. But in case we don't have this chance to talk again, because I'm hoping not to have to meet again, is we will actually hear anything, hopefully, unless forced to come in, we'll hear anything that comes down tomorrow, since we don't have any more today, correct? So anything that comes down on our final day, we can hear Tuesday. We'll come in at 10 o'clock on Tuesday, and during that morning session, we will take care of whatever the drop was from tomorrow, if there is a drop. And then beginning Tuesday afternoon, Representative Bartel volunteered to be the first mouse through the hole, and so as a result, he will present Section A of Appropes, and we will be on House Bill 2. And so we want to thank the first mouse through the hole, Chairman Bartel, for choosing to do so. And we hope he finds the cheese. With that, we are adjourned. I have a question. Yes, sir.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, in light of the governor's lifting of the mask mandate, and in the spirit of cooperation, efficiency, and effectiveness of this committee, and in the words of a former great president, Chairman Jones, tear down this wall. For the good of the order. Thank you.
Thank you. I will take it under consideration. I'm not sure I can keep staff in the room if the wall's down, but we will take it under consideration. Thank you. Any other items for the good of the order? All right, we are adjourned.